As a cow bound through the nose by a long rope is conditioned, so also human beings are bound by different Vedic injunctions and are conditioned to obey the orders of the Supreme. Purport. Every living being, whether a man or an animal or a bird, thinks that he is free by himself, but actually no one is free from the severe laws of the Lord. The laws of the Lord are severe because they cannot be disobeyed in any circumstance. The man-made laws may be evaded by cunning outlaws, but in the codes of the Supreme Lawmaker, there is not the slightest possibility of neglecting the laws. A slight change in the course of God-made law can bring about a massive danger to be faced by the lawbreaker. Such laws of the Supreme are generally known as the codes of religion, under different conditions. But the principle of religion everywhere is one and the same. Namely, obey the orders of the Supreme God, the codes of religion. That is the condition of material existence. All living beings in the material world have taken up the risk of conditioned life by their own selection, and are thus entrapped by the laws of material nature. The only way to get out of the entanglement is to agree to obey the Supreme. But instead of becoming free from the clutches of Maya or illusion, foolish human beings become bound up by different nomenclatures, being designated as Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras, Hindus, Mohammedans, Indians, Europeans, Americans, Chinese, and many others. And thus they carry out the orders of the Supreme Lord under the influence of respective scriptural or legislative injunctions. The statutory laws of the state are imperfect imitation replicas of religious codes. The secular state or the godless state allows the citizens to break the laws of God, but restricts them from disobeying the laws of the state. The result is that the people in general suffer more by breaking the laws of God than by obeying the imperfect laws made by man. Every man is imperfect by constitution, under conditions of material existence, and there is not the least possibility that even the most materially advanced man can enact perfect legislation. On the other hand, there is no such imperfection in the laws of God. If leaders are educated in the laws of God, there is no necessity of a makeshift legislative council of aimless men. There is necessity of change in the makeshift laws of man, but there is no change in the God-made laws, because they are made perfect by the all-perfect personality of Godhead. The codes of religion, scriptural injunctions, are made by liberated representatives of God in consideration of different conditions of living, and by carrying out the orders of the Lord, the conditioned living beings gradually become free from the clutches of material existence. The factual position of the living being is, however, that he is the eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord. In his liberated state, he renders service to the Lord in transcendental love, and thus enjoys a life full of freedom, even sometimes on an equal level with the Lord, or sometimes more than the Lord. But in the conditioned material world, every living being wants to be the Lord of other living beings, and thus by the illusion of Maya, this mentality of lording it over becomes a cause of further extension of conditional life. So in the material world, the living being is still more conditioned, until he surrenders unto the Lord by reviving his original state of eternal servitorship. That is the last instruction of the Bhagavad Gita and all other recognized scriptures of the world.
Yatha gavo nasi protas tantyam baddhas chadam abhi vaktantyam nam abir baddha vahanti balim ishituhu.
As a cow bound through the nose by a long rope is conditioned, so also human beings are bound by different Vedic injunctions and are conditioned to obey the orders of the Supreme. Hare Krishna, everyone. So thank you for having me here today to try and render some service for the Vaishnavas and for Guru and Gauranga. So it's quite a large purport, lots of points covered here. We have about half an hour. I don't think we'll be able to cover all the points of this purport, so I've just kind of picked out some key aspects here, and we'll see what we can look at for today. First is interesting in the translation. Narad Muni is actually saying to Yudhishthira Maharaj, as a cow bound through the nose by a long rope is conditioned. So human beings are bound by different Vedic injunctions and are conditioned to obey the order of the Supreme. So when one looks at the word bound through the nose by a long rope, it almost seems it doesn't seem like a very pleasant situation to be in, actually. You know, to be bound, to be restricted in what you can and can't do, because, you know, as Prabhupada says in the purport, every living being actually likes to think of himself as being free. But Narad Muni is actually giving the reality that actually no one is free, right? So then the question is, so what do we do in this situation? We're not free, but we want to be free because that's our eternal constitutional position, and yet we're stuck in the material world. So we're going to look at a bit about the whole aspect of regulation, which is one of the big things actually that Prabhupada's talking about in their purport, that regardless of who you are, everyone has to really follow these God-made laws. God has given these laws, Krishna has given these laws for us to follow. And it's not something that's draconian in nature, it's something that's actually ultimately is going to help us to actually attain real freedom. Not the freedom in the material sense, which is like illusory, but real freedom. So I'll start off with when Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that those who worship me, who give all the activities to me, you know, engaging in me, I'll swiftly deliver them from this ocean material existence. And then Krishna goes on to say that if you can't fix your mind upon me without deviation, then just follow the regulative principles, bhakti yoga, which is, I think, most of us would probably fall into that category. Okay? Because for the first class people, they've already got that attachment to Krishna, right? You know, through transcendental love. And for second class people, then there are all these different rules and regulations by which you can eventually elevate yourself to that stage of attachment to Krishna. Now, in this purport, Prabhupada is also saying the same thing, that there are various laws that one has to follow. And this is for different people in different varnas, whether you're Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, or whether you're different religions or different races, backgrounds, Hindus, Mohammedans, Indians, Americans, Chinese, whatever it is, that all are required to follow certain order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead under the influence of their respective scriptures. So we find in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there is a diagram. I don't know if some of you definitely would have heard of it, called the Panchakosha, right? Panchakosha is basically the five stages of consciousness, right? You've got the Anamaya, Pranamaya, Manamaya, Gyanamaya, and Vijnanamaya, and then Anandamaya. Yeah, sorry, Manamaya and Vijnanamaya are pretty much the same. And then you've got Vijnanamaya, and then Anandamaya. So in each stage, so these are a bit like, you know, in modern psychology, you've got Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And in each stage, there are different needs for different people and depending on what their consciousness is. Some people, they relate with the world through the senses. Their happiness is through sensual aspects. Some people, they're more motivated through, preservation, conservation, and growth, right? A bit like, you know, kind of like Vaishya mentality, right? Looking at things, survival and increasing the stability and survival and security, right? And then you go up and up the pyramid. Then you get to the stage of Manamai, which is about looking at systems. It's about making sense of the environment around you and trying to actually, you know, have some level of control over the environment. Very much related to Kshatriya Dharma, right? So each stage, the Vedic scriptures also give us injunctions on how people in different consciousness should live their lives, but with a purpose that eventually elevate them to the highest standard. And the key thing, however, that those different laws are actually given by Krishna himself. So this is one of the amazing things about the Vedas, is that it's so all-encompassing that it's not just actually catering for one type of people, one size fits all. It looks at who you are and what you need in your life. Did you know that there are actually scriptures that are designed for people in the modes of ignorance, passion, goodness? We know, for example, in our Vaishnava Dharma, in one sense, we're kind of following like a very elevated way of life, you know, with our regulated principles. But in the Vedas, they cater for people in lower stages of consciousness with the aim of gradually bringing them up. There are even injunctions on if you're in a certain situation where you have to eat meat, etc., then what to do. Right, so there are all these different rules and regulations, but the main thing is that it's given by Krishna, so you have to follow according to what Krishna specified. The main thing here is we have to learn how to follow, right? Because ultimately we are followers. Our main position is we are dasanu, 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 right? We are the servants of the servants of the servants of the gopis of Vrindavan. Okay? So you have to learn to follow. And it's interesting, Bhakti Vidyapurna Maharaj was saying that the notion of following your dharma is something that applies to all people in all conditions of life. And then he gave something quite extraordinary. Even if you're a criminal, you know, sometimes you have, he gave the example of like mafia. So obviously what mafia people do is very tamasic in nature. It's not going to get them to Godhead or anything. But when you're in less in a situation, you're part of a mafia gang, you know they have their rules they have to follow. They have the, can you believe it? They have the initiations, right? You have to like slit your hand and then, you know, the blood comes out and you have to swear an oath to the capo, you know, the main captain saying, yes, I promise to be part of this gang and I'll not disobey, things like that. I used to watch a lot of gangster movies back in the day, okay? So I know these things, okay? But the point is that, interesting enough, they're doing a lot of vikarmic activity. If a person, this is what Maharaj is saying, if a person within that gang then decides to betray his gang, he's going to get even more vikarma and get even more like degraded than already he is. So if he actually followed his gang's rules in doing bad stuff, he will get vikarma, but to a certain level. But then if he betrays his people and goes against his own degraded dharma, then he's going to even degrade himself even more. So therefore, the whole point, even if you're in a degraded form of life, at least you're following something, even though it's bad. Hopefully by following something, then next life, he will still get his reactions, but then he can get maybe slightly better life because at least he followed his leader, right? And then hopefully next time we'll get a better leader with better, you know, values in life, shall we say. Does that make sense though, right? The fact that the notion of actually just following in itself actually will very much help us in our journey. Because this is one of the big things about people is we don't actually want to follow. We don't actually like to follow. So whatever situation is, it's about actually being in that situation. So this is what Krishna's doing in 12th chapter. We've got that one road. It's going back to Godhead. But then based on the people, there are different levels on that path. Similar to what Chaitanya Charitamrita says, that there's we are inclusive, meaning that we have got one path back to Godhead, but there are different layers to that path. Okay, so here we can see that one of the main things that Prabhupada is talking about is the need to follow these regulations that are given by Krishna. And this is something that Godruma Prabhu also spoke about length yesterday. He gave the nice example about, you know, when you're driving in this country, you have to follow the DVLA. Otherwise, you know, you're going to get in trouble with, you know, the interaction that you had with that chap that you met at the temple. A nice analogy. Again, Chaitanya Charitamrita actually came up with this nice analogy that sometimes we, like the Prabhuji that I think Godruma Prabhu met, the example that he gave, that we sometimes don't like the idea of following these regulated principles. We know that, for example, there's one reporter said to Prabhupada, you know, back in the day, that Prabhupada, you know, you have all these rules and regulations in your movement. Your disciples can't do this, they can't do that. So where's the enjoyment there? What kind of enjoyment do they have in their life? And Prabhupada said, no, I'm actually teaching them how to really enjoy. Because actually Prabhupada has recognized that you're in a human body, so the level of enjoyment that you actually have the right to is much more higher than the sense of gratification that most people are indulging in. Because that is something that even animals are doing. Often they can even do it better than we can. Yeah. So these regulative principles are actually principles of freedom. They're there actually not to kind of like restrict us. Because even though it says here the cow is bound through the nose by a rope, but it's not to actually trap the cow. It's for the cow's safety. Right, so the cow can enjoy life and be taken care of properly without having anxiety, like our cows in a goshala. They don't have an anxiety that, you know, at night the wolves are going to come and take them, or they're going to wander off into the road and, you know, get hit by a vehicle or something like that. So they can, you know, they can just relax. So the same way, the analogy is given that just like when you're driving along a treacherous road up a mountain, right, and it's misty. This is basically our situation right in the material world. We're driving in a car, and then what happens, you know, in certain roads, especially in Europe, right, they have like, you know, barriers on the road edges, like, you know, when you're going to, when you're in Italy a few years back, or in Germany and things, right, they have some barriers on the, when you're going around these valley roads, right, and you know that if you go on the edge, then you kind of fall off, right, so they have these kind of barriers. You can still see the view, but they have the barriers there to kind of guide you on the right way. See, if you were to now say to them that, why are you doing this? Why are you putting these barriers there? And especially, remember, it's misty, mist representing the kind of fog of Kali Yuga, the ignorance that we can't even see what's going on around us, right? So when you're actually going along the road and you start complaining that why are you putting all these barriers in place? I want to drive where I want to drive because I'm my own man and I can do what I want because I'm free. I'm free to do what I please, right? And you do that, but what you don't realize is that no, that the barriers are there to help you. Look, if you drive this way, you don't even know what's on that turning there, right? And this fog, you're going to fall off the cliff. So these barriers are there to help you, to guide you along the road. So the same way, these regulative principles that are there, that are given by Krishna, are there to actually help us on the road. And the key thing here that Prabhupada is mentioning is they're given by Krishna. Not just any rules, but Krishna's rules. Why? Because Krishna is known as Apurusheya. Means that he is beyond the defects of the human being. Whenever we make rules, then it's going to falter. Okay? So the key thing is that they're given by Krishna. Now here's the issue though. When we follow dharma, what happens is that we may also get a lot of perks on the way. Because they say that when you look after dharma, dharma will look after you. And if you look at it, and we can see this on an individual level and on a collective level. When you follow dharma, you know they say austerity, you do tapasya, you get a lot of benedictions from it. Even if you're not a devotee and you follow, you do austerities, you're going to get benedictions. You see a lot of these very, very empowered people in the world who are not devotees. They might even be demonic, but why they're so empowered? Because they did the tapasya. Because they picked a dharma and they followed it very well. Even Vedic dharmas. Like these people who are like, you know, Veda Vadarathas, right? They use the Vedas for their own materialistic ends. People like Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, they respected the Vedas. They took the Vedas, and they obviously didn't take it for the transcendental aim. They took it for some material aim, and they followed it very, very well. So they became immensely powerful. Lot of people, they'll follow dharma and they become very powerful. So it's said that even Radhanath Maharaj, Kripamoy Prabhu, they were saying in various lectures that even civilizations, the reason why certain civilizations rise is because they follow the dharma very well. Okay, we have the example of Egypt. Egypt was a very dharmic place back in the day. Even Bhakti Vikas Maharaj was saying that the reason why the British were able to conquer the world for like, you know, 200 years or 300 years, was because, you know, they had these Victorian values that were based on strong Christian, you know, Protestant principles and things, which at that time the British were following very, very stringently. You wouldn't think, looking at Britain now, because, you know, most people are, you know, society's quite messed up right now. But back in the day, they were very, very stringent. In fact, even a lot of these British governors and things would actually say that you must practice celibacy. You know, things like that. Even when you go to the native countries and you colonize them, yeah, make sure that you keep your rigid principles in place. And it's because of that austerity that they did that they managed to actually run the world for the world, you know, get so much influence. However, here's an interesting thing. Most people, when they follow dharma, it's for materialistic ends. It's not with a transcendental goal in mind. So what happens? When the materialistic fruits start coming from that dharma, then they get too attached to those materialistic fruits. And then the civilizations start to crumble. Radhanath Maharaj is saying in a lecture, the reason why ancient Egypt crumbled because they got too wound up in sensuality and objectification of women. Bhakti Vikas Maharaj said the same thing at the British Empire, that they got very powerful, and then because of the, you know, influence they began, obviously they became proud, and then quite swiftly the British Empire's crumbled. And even now, you know, let's see how where Britain's position in the global stage, maintains, you know, over the next 100 years or whatever, right? Dhyayato visayam pumsam sangaste supajayate sangat sanjayate kama kamat bijayate krodat bijayate sammoha. Yeah. So when you actually develop these fruits and then you start developing that dharma, then degrades into sensuality. Start to meditate on the objects of the senses, and from the object of the senses you start to fall down. And when you can't actually satisfy those senses, then you go to the next verse, right? Krodat bhavati sammoha sammoha iti brahma smriti vamsa buddhi nasho buddhi nashar panashati. Right? That when that sensual desires are not fulfilled, it leads to wrath. And through that wrath, intelligence gets lost and you fall down again. And you see this happening again and again in civilizations, Egypt, Babylon, Mesopotamia. There are many, many global civilizations that once powerful, they've crumbled. And there will be civilizations. Because if you look at most civilizations, they're going through the same trajectory. They follow dharma. They're very austere. They follow a lot of principles. Then they get to a lot of high-level opulence. Once the opulence comes, they themselves get trapped by the opulence, fall into sensuality. Sensual desires don't get fulfilled. Becomes wrath, violence, degradation, crumbles. It happens again and again throughout history. Okay? So, why? Because in most cases, the ultimate goal of why we're doing the dharma gets lost. Krishna comes out of the picture. We see that in Western civilizations. They were actually very, very Christian, very, very strong in their Christian principles. As soon as they got a bit of understanding about the world, as soon as they got a knowledge of the scientific laws, okay, that means God doesn't exist now, right? Then what happens sooner or later? Purna Mushtika Bhav, right? They will become a mouse again. Okay, you become rise and then you fall because you become too proud. And this happens on a personal level as well. Ravana did so much tapasya, but at the end of it, because he got too big in himself, then he fell down, thought that he could be God himself, that he could take on God. He can take God's energy. He can take God's luxury, opulence, and obviously take God out of the picture. Got destroyed, lost everything. In one sense, Dhritarashtra, maybe not to that acute example, but still, he's on that level in the sense that he did a lot of pious karma in his previous lives, got to that stage, but then wasn't looking after dharma, condoned a lot of adharmic activities to go on under his rule. So the main thing is when you are even following dharma, which are given by Krishna, if you're not careful and you get too caught up in the fruits of the dharma, then you start to negate that Krishna is there and behind it, and you start to twist that dharma to make it yourself. We see this in so many levels when people concoct the philosophy, when people get trapped in even within devotional service. The other day, I think on Sunday, Sutapa Prabhu was talking about the different stages within Madhura Kadambini. And we see that even within Bhajana Kriya, right, which is very initial stage, you've got Taranga Rangini, where people are getting caught up in the fruits that they're getting from bhakti, and they can actually get caught up in that, and that can actually make them veer away. Or in fact, one of the anarth is actually bhakti yota. Bhakti yota meaning you're caught up in the fruits that you get on your path to bhakti, which can also then lead to also aparadota. Through the fruits you're getting, you become proud, you become inattentive, you become offensive. Again, you fall down. Okay? So therefore, the main thing is we always have to keep the transcendental goal in mind. We cannot think, and this is again Prabhupada saying here, you cannot try to experience happiness or get out of this material world through your man-made laws. Because your man-made laws are made by people who themselves are covered, right? By the Maya Shaktis, Avranatmika Shakti and Vikshepa Shakti. The Avranatmika Shakti is a covering Shakti. It will make you think something who you're not, right? And the Vikshepa Shakti is the projecting Shakti. It will make you think that because I've got this identity, therefore I need this and this and this to keep me happy. But it's all based on a false, false concoction. Okay? So, one of the things is that only by Krishna's laws can we actually get rid of these deep desires and actually see who we actually are. Everything else, all of the man-made laws are actually external concoctions and things like that. It's the internal mind that needs to be looked at. Even our desires, often what happens if you look at the man-made laws, they'll look at the external reasons why people are suffering and then try and solve it through that. But what they don't realize often is there's the internal mindset that needs to be changed. Okay? I'll give an example. Sobri Muni was meditating in the bottom of the lake, right, in the Bhagavatam, right? And then he got agitated by seeing the two fish mating. So the understanding is this, that it's not that the two fish was alluring Sobri Muni, but it's the act of that they represent that actually made Sobri Muni fall down, right? It's not actually the mating of the two fish that was, arousing him. It was actually the what it representing for him, right? The thought of what that represents. So therefore, this needs to be attended to. This cannot be done just through external measures. You have to go more deeper than that. The seeds of those representations have to be taken out. Okay? Just give me one sec. Yeah, so basically all our desires, they're all based on our mental concoctions. Even when we feel sad or when we feel happy in this world, they're all based on our mental concoctions. And the thing is, though, even when we feel sad, there is a subtle sense of sense gratification there. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ji ki, Shri Shri Go Nitai ki. So yeah, whatever the man-made laws are, they're all based on sense gratification. Even when they're like, you know, trying to make you, or even like whatever suffering we're experiencing, it's all mental concoctions, and it all has some level of sense gratification involved there. But they're all missing the point of life, which is, of course, what is the purpose of this life? Not getting too attached to this family life or this material life, like King Chitraketu, or for example, you know, many other people like that. So here, Prabhupada is saying that we have, you know, these God-given laws which we have to follow. Yeah, God-given law, and this is the perfect knowledge. And what's the point, purpose of this? We have to serve Krishna favorably, not like Ravana, not like Shukracharya. The other day, I remember Gudrumapur was mentioning in his class that you have people who are very intelligent materially. They're known as Mayaya Pahita Gyanas, right? Their knowledge is taken away by Maya, right? Not like that. We have to serve Krishna favorably as he actually desires, because we can't avoid Maya otherwise. She's everywhere. It's like fish, you know, like swimming through water. We can't avoid it. It's everywhere around us, right? Even the people in the modes, we can't conceive of what is, you know, Krishna, because obviously he's obviously beyond the modes. So how can we recognize him until we actually follow what he's given us? Okay? And he's the one that so can only help us to come out of this place. And what's his final instruction? We'll give up all other considerations, surrender unto him alone, and become his devotee. And it's interesting here, because Prabhupada mentions that, okay, there are different dharmas like Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra. The other day, Radha Govind was mentioning how even the whole point of these social systems is actually samsiddhir haritoshanam. Even the social systems that we're practicing, like varnashram, ultimately it should be geared towards serving Hari. Otherwise, they lose their purpose, we're going to again fall down to the material fruits. There are two types of, there are actually many different types of varnashram, but they can be divided into two main categories. One is pravritti, and one is nivritti. Pravritti means that you follow the varnashram system to help you become more situated and more prosperous in this material world, get a better birth, get a better fruits in your next life. Our version is nivritti. We're trying to actually come out of this place. We're trying to disconnect from this place. And this is ultimate Devi Varnashram, is that even when we are designated within Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, whatever it is, it's so that we can ultimately serve Krishna, okay, and not get attracted by the dharmic fruits that come along our way. One of the nice examples that I think of this is Hanuman. When Hanuman is on the edge of India, and then, you know, he jumped across to Lanka. You know, well, I think we talked about it in the previous session. Does everyone know what was the first object? You know, like when he jumped across the ocean, there are various objects that came out of the ocean. Does anyone know what was the first object? Yeah, the golden mountain, right? Name was Mainak, right? And then the Mainak was actually a gift from the gods. So in one sense, it's very auspicious, very pious. And when Mainak came out of the water, there was like nice valleys and lakes, and like, you know, like celestial beings on the mountain itself, you know, and that they're kind of like welcoming Hanuman, saying, Hanuman, you're on this amazing journey to actually serve Lord Ram, but why don't you just take a bit of a rest here first before you jump across? And Hanuman's mood was, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to focus on my mission and serve Lord Hari, because if I stay here, there's always a risk that I'm going to get caught up in this fruits of this of Mainak, and I'm going to get stuck there. Bit like, again, it kind of reminds me of the whole Taranga Rangini aspect of Bhajana Kriya. You know, the obstacles that come, even when we're practicing devotional service, because we're also gaining a lot of benediction, we're going to get a lot of facilities, opulences, you know, profit, adoration, distinction. We have to be careful. We always have to, you know, they say in English, you have to keep your eye on the ball. Keep your eye on the game. Don't lose your game. Okay? So, like that, we have to always keep going. The good thing, however, in this age, is that even though Prabhupada is talking, there are various man-made laws, and there are various, obviously, God-made laws, and we know that God-made laws will obviously take precedence over the man-made laws. If you look at the Vaishnava scriptures, they're quite complex. They have a lot of different kind of like rules and regulations. Thankfully, by Prabhupada's mercy, he's made it very, very easy for us. He's actually given us the basics. He's actually extracted whatever's needed from, Rupa Goswami scriptures and from Sanatan Goswami scriptures like the Hari Bhakti Vilas, and just given us what we can handle and obviously practice. And one of the main things that he's given us, what's the main practice that he's given us that we should actually do, a God-given practice? Yes, Babaji. That's right, the chanting with the holy name. Right, holy name is the ultimate thing that we can practice, and through that, all the other dharmic regulations will fall into place. Okay, of course, one thing as well, the holy name itself is not just there to eradicate our miseries; it's actually there to give us Krishna prema. So Sundarlal Prabhu once he gave a class here a couple of years ago, and he says that often what happens when we chant the holy name, a lot of our miseries will already start to get eradicated. But we can't stop there because we're not still experiencing the full effect of the holy name. So we still have to keep practicing the holy name. And that's our good fortune that even in Kali Yuga, we have the easiest process that's giving us the highest benediction. Often the example is given that, when a father has got two children, a bedridden son, an ill son, and a very healthy son, who does the father look after more? The ill son, isn't it? So in the same way, we're Kali Yuga people. So we're like the sick, bedridden children. But that's why what the Krishna's done, he's looking after us more and he's given us what is actually the highest in the easiest possible way. And the interesting thing is when we're practicing devotional service, even if we don't practice it perfectly straight away, the fact that we're endeavoring, it means that Krishna is going to see that he's going to give us the mercy to bring us higher and higher. Tyaktva sadharmam charanam bhajam hare bhajan apakvo tapate tato yadi yatrak favabad ramabodamushyakrim kovarta apto bhajatam swadharmataha. One who has forsaken his material occupations to engage in the devotional service of the Lord may sometimes fall down in an immature stage, yet there is no danger of his being unsuccessful. On the other hand, a non-devotee, though fully engaged in occupational duties, does not gain anything. Okay? So main thing is we surrender to these God-made laws. We practice the chanting process. Initial stage, there might be some austerity involved. But as we practice more and more and more, then we realize that actually the natural taste will come. See, we cannot change our habits and conditions just by willpower alone. Initial stage, yeah, we can try and force it. But what happens, we can only do that focus for a short while. In the long run, we need to kind of float into orbit. You could to try and get out of this place the rocket. When a rocket is launched, initially a lot of fuel and energy is required. But there's only so much time before that fuel and energy is going to run out. After a certain point, the rocket's going to fall down. Unless it comes to a certain stage where it can just nicely, effortlessly float out of orbit and it's nicely floating around, right? That's our bhakti as well. Initial stage, there is some tapasya involved. But eventually, as we get the higher taste given by Krishna, that will then actually carry us through. Okay, so time is almost coming. I'll leave it for questions and stuff. But I'll leave it with a nice quote, that Shivara Maharaj gave. He said that this Krishna consciousness is not a cheap thing. There are austerities involved. But compared to what is in store for us, when we start experiencing nectar, you realize that actually whatever hardships and austerities you performed was absolutely nothing to compare to what you're going to experience. Because that's why even as devotees, we often straddle the line between, man-made conceptions and what Krishna's conceptions are. And initial time, Krishna's very kind. This is something I experience, is that you come to Krishna consciousness, you accept certain things of what Krishna's teaching us, but you have your own material concoctions and your material desires that you want to fulfill. And Krishna will allow you to do that. But as you go deeper and deeper into your Krishna consciousness, what happens is Krishna will push you to intensify your sadhana more and more. Because what will happen is that if you try and still do the balancing act between Krishna and, man-made things to seek some man-made happiness, it's going to create more and more tension in your body. It's going to actually create more, you're going to actually feel more and more like drained. You feel more and more drained. It's almost like you have to make that choice now. Okay, look, I've been doing this balancing act for such a long time. I need to now make a more of a concrete decision which way I'm going to go. Right? So this is something that we also have to take into consideration. And even the man-made, our feelings, our desires, we can actually all kind of like just sublimate within the Krishna conscious process. The other day, I think it was one of the classes, I think it was probably Sutta Prabhu's class, I can't remember, where it was mentioned how, you know, when people write love songs, materialistic love songs, can they be dovetailed in Krishna's service? Well, initial stage, yeah, until obviously, you know, one gets to the stage where one is, the love is coming from the heart without needing the material stimuli to inspire you. But even the feelings that you have in the material world, those can all be sublimated in Krishna consciousness. And there's a wonderful verse actually in the Bhagavad Gita that says, Vishnu Purana, which says, Yuvatinam yatha yuni, yunam cho yuvato yatha, mano bhirabate tadvan, mano maye ramatam twayi. Just as the thoughts of young boys take pleasure in young girls, and just as the thoughts of young girls take pleasure in young boys, similarly, allow my thoughts to take pleasure in you alone. Right? So even all the kind of fruits that we're looking for, ultimately all can be had through Krishna. Even Sobri Muni, if you think about it, the fact that he was looking at this mating and what it represented, right? Ultimately, it's that need for that, you know, that union, that love, that relationship. But that love and relationship, one can have through Krishna. It just requires a bit of tapasya, just experiencing those fruits initially, which are a bit bitter, before those fruits become more sweeter as we practice and go along. Initial stage, however, maybe some tapasya is required. But it's the only way in which you can actually get out of this place, as Narad Muni is saying. So tolerate the long rope around your nose, right? In the sense that we're all like kind of being the cow here, right? Tolerate the long nose. Understand that as you're driving along, yes, there are initial barriers and strict guidelines you have to follow. But through that, you'll experience real freedom, real happiness in the long run. Okay, so I'll finish there. Any questions, comments, queries?